It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 365. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com. Everybody, welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please visit the main website at miketechshow.com. You can email me suggestions for future show topics or any question. My email address is miketechshow@gmail.com. You can leave me a voicemail message. I have four voicemails for tonight, and the fourth one will generate the topic for tonight's show, which is going to be about DNS. You can leave me a voicemail at 240-949-2450. Visit the wiki, mtswiki.com, where you can find links to all of my archive shows. Follow me on social media, Facebook and Twitter. It's twitter.com/MikeTechShow. Send me a friend request on Facebook, facebook.com/MikeTechShow. And I guess soon, Google Plus, because a lot of you are already adding me to Google Plus, and I have been very negligent on that because I haven't had a lot of time, so haven't been there playing with Google Plus enough, and hopefully I will get some time this weekend, and I will catch up on G Plus. I got a lot to cover tonight. First thing, I don't have it set up on the website yet, but I will this weekend. I'm going to have on the right-hand side a link to a survey for the Tech Podcast Network for my podcast. Now, I did a survey once way back years ago, and a lot of you filled that out. It was great, but I got new demographics to have the information on everybody who's listening to the show, and it's a simple survey. It really helps in bringing in the right sponsor, and it shows who's listening, and you know, the age, the your male and female. You know, it's a lot of great information that advertisers want, and it really helps. So if you could take a moment and fill that survey out, greatly appreciate it. We want to welcome to the Mike Tech Show podcast GoTo Assist by Citrix. There are two things IT professionals and their clients have in common. They want the job done right, and they want it done fast. That's why I highly recommend GoTo Assist Express by Citrix to anyone in IT. It puts clients at ease with its simple and secure remote support and puts you in a position to do what you do best: access, diagnose, and resolve. Try GoTo Assist Express free for 30 days. Visit GoToAssist.com/podcast to see how you can deliver live tech support to anyone, anywhere with GoTo Assist Express. Let's get started with the voicemail. Here's the first one.
Hey, Mike, this is Kevin, Chief Computer Medicine with a computer doctor in Richmond, Virginia. I was just listening to, the show 364, the one where you're talking about how you've got a customer with a new Dell that's having intermittent lockup problems. We've done all the hardware scans on it and still not finding anything. Getting ready to reload the operating system. Recently had a customer with a newer HP tower running Windows 7 Professional 64-bit, and they actually ran through Windows System updates and downloaded the latest Service Pack 1 and a few other updates with it. And they started getting some intermittent kind of locking up or mostly just slow freezing and then releasing, and they were also having a lot of problems with their ACT software. And ACT tech support told them that it was an issue with the .NET framework. We told the customer to go ahead and uninstall Service Pack 1. That didn't work, and we tried rolling back prior to Service Pack 1. That didn't work. So then we tried the .NET framework cleanup utility to clean up .NET off there and then reinstall .NET. That didn't work. So as a last-ditch effort, before reloading the operating system, I don't even know what made me think about it, but I had the customer run sfc/scan now in the command line. I told them, you know, this is going to take several hours. Just go ahead and run it before you head home, and then, you know, take a look at it the next day. If it's still messing up, then we're going to have to reload the operating system. Called me the next day, said everything was working great, got back up and running, no problem. So I don't know what, you know, what was going wrong. I know mine was, of course, purely software, and yours is more than likely software, but you're not, still not sure. So if you've got a few hours to kill and want to try one more thing before reloading the operating system, what the hell, give it a shot and see what happens. So thanks, as always, for a great show, Mike. Take care. Bye.
Kevin, great tip, because when you have nothing to lose, and that's the only time I would ever pull out SFC, which is the system file checker, and it goes through every system file and replaces it with a file if it thinks there's something wrong with it. There's some dangers to this. I've seen SFC really mess up a computer. I've also seen it fix a computer, sort of like SpinRite. It's kind of 50-50 with me with hard drives and that. With nothing left to lose, since I'm scheduled next Wednesday to redo this Dell system we're talking about, on Tuesday, maybe Monday, I'm going to have him run this, because I'm already scheduled to redo the system, so we absolutely have nothing to lose. But here's what you got to remember. After you are done running SFC/scan now, you must go to Windows Update and re-update everything, because it will put the files back to a file that may be prior to any updates. So you got to run system updates after you do this. Keep that in mind. Uncle Al in the chat says, you know, definitely it'll ask for the original CD. Have that ready to put in. Very important. It's a dangerous step, because I've seen it cause problems. So we don't want to whip this out first and try it when there's a problem. But if you have nothing to lose and you do have these intermittent lockups that's happening, and I've tried everything, I've thrown every diagnostic and utility at this system, and it's still locking up. I've updated all the drivers. We've updated the system BIOS. There is no hardware failure whatsoever. There's nothing left to do except redo the operating system. So I'm going to have my client do this on Monday, and we'll see how he makes out. Voicemail number two.
Hey, Mike, what's going on, man? Long-time fan of your show. I just wanted to call and thought that maybe somebody could use this bit of information. If they're blind or have low vision, there is a project called the Vinix Project, which is a flavor of Ubuntu. And the nice thing is that accessibility is turned on out of the box. There are different flavors of Ubuntu. I mean, listen to me. Of Vinix. There is the regular live ISO. There is the VMware version. And there's a Google USB, a couple different Google USB versions. Yeah, so somebody who is low on, you know, vision, the memory turned on, it just makes things so much easier. Now, some people have reported some problems with sound, if you think this might be of interest anyway, the URL is vinix.org.uk. That's vinix.org.uk. Hey, man, I hope you had a wonderful 4th, and I will catch up with you later on. Peace.
Thank you for that recommendation, and I will have the link in the show notes for tonight's show. And I know I do have individuals that are blind that listen to the podcast. I know this because I supported the push for Google to change the Carpaccia system, which stops anybody that's visually impaired, unless they can click on something and have it speak to them for what to type. Carpaccia kind of prevents anybody that's visually impaired or blind. A good friend of ours who is my oldest son's godmother, is blind, a good friend of my wife's. So it's important that software companies, and it's great to see a Linux distribution that will help with having, which I didn't realize, and that you know this is available, so it's nice. So I'm really glad to see projects and open source development for people with any accessibility issues. That's great to hear. Back to the printer problems here. I can't help myself.
Hello, Mike. Patrick Boyle, Springfield, Missouri. That tray 1, tray 2 printer problem. Oh, boy. Really, it's not like you've done everything you need to do, but it's in the configuration. You've got two configurations. One is in the printer driver itself, and the other is in the software that's using the printer. I had a similar issue with some mortgage software, and you just have to look at all the tray settings and whether they're set to auto or tray 1 or tray 2 and test them one at a time and make sure you adjust them as needed in both the printer driver software and in the application software that's going to be using the printers. I know that's not specific, but that's what it is. It's just have to look around on those two. Hey, great show. Hope you're having a pleasant week.
Well, Patrick, you're right. And this has reared its ugly head again with the trays. And my client asked me on my next visit if I could just sit and try to work this out. I thought I tried everything. I'm going to just go back to square one and look at the settings. Maybe even look to see if there's a firmware update for the printer. That's something I have not done. So I'm going to check to see if there's a firmware update because I think I have everything set. And we still have trouble selecting the proper tray in order to print from this Dell network printer. The final voicemail, and it's also from Patrick, his observation here leads to a more complicated discussion.
Hey, Mike. Patrick Boyle, Springfield, Missouri. Just want to let you know if you try to go to miketechshow.com, you end up being forwarded to miknation.net/some5 characters and an error 404 page. So if you go directly to miknation.net, it works fine. But if you go to miketechshow first, you get sent to a miknation 404 page. Anyway, thanks. Have a good week.
If you do that today, every person who types Mike Tech Show, some of you are going to get different results. Why is that? When I type miketechshow.com, it goes right to miknation.net. But a couple weeks ago, when I was typing that, we discovered in the pre-show and in the chat that depending on what your DNS settings are, some could not make the forward, some could. And this is what the whole foundation of the internet is built on, because we cannot remember IP addresses. We rely on domain names and the domain name database of our ISPs and Google and other big entities to make that translation from that obscure IP address to a real name. And one of the things that I noticed when I typed miketechshow.com a few weeks ago and I couldn't get to the website, I changed my DNS and I was using Google's DNS, which is 8.8.8.8. And when I changed it to my Verizon ISP's DNS, it got right there. So that means the Verizon database was making that transition and that translation going to the proper place for Mike Nation, and it was making that forward, it was allowing. Where the other DNS, Google's DNS for some reason was not. Is it because of caching? A lot of companies and a lot of places try to help with performance by helping you get to the website faster by caching content and pages and caching some DNS queries that are common. So it really depends on what DNS you're using, which brings up a whole nother topic. Winston Wolf last week was all excited one morning. Matter of fact, it was Friday morning, and calls me up and says, "Mike, I made a major discovery last night." And I said, "What was that?" And he says, "OpenDNS is preventing malware infestations for every client that I've installed it for." That's a bold statement. I've been using OpenDNS off and on in my house. I've recommended it to some clients, but I have a client that has OpenDNS, and they're using the OpenDNS IP addresses, and I know I've had to help them with spyware infestation. Winston, he said, every client that he has put on OpenDNS, it definitely will help you and protect. So what are we talking about here? What is OpenDNS? And if you go to opendns.com, you're going to find a site that will walk you through how to protect your network a little bit by using their DNS numbers. So if you go through their servers, they're doing a little filtering for you. Here, a great example. You can even do some basic content filtering if you want to protect your house for certain categories. You can create an account, and then you put the DNS numbers that they use, their DNS servers, you put those IP addresses in your router for DNS. And then this will vary based on the router that you have. And OpenDNS has great tutorials on most of the common routers where it will walk you through how to make that change. If all of your systems behind that router obtain an IP address automatically using DHCP, which is a protocol that will automatically assign a dynamic IP address. This is an IP address that can change, that can vary based on when your device boots up and queries the router and asks for an IP address. That's different than static IP addresses where you have a fixed, very specific IP address. If you're using DHCP, which most of us are, most of your operating systems at the typical home is using DHCP, and the router is assigning those IP addresses, it's also assigning the servers for DNS that will be used when you type a website name in your browser, and it will make that translation and it will use the servers that you put in your router. And if you put the OpenDNS IP addresses there and you set up an account for the IP address that you have for your house that's given to you by your ISP, and they have different setups that even if your IP address changes, there's information on how to set that up if you have a dynamic IP address. You now create that account. You can literally block certain categories from being visited from your house. So it's a great way for parents to kind of help protect from adult websites and bad websites. You can protect yourself. Let's say you check the box for block gambling. Well, you might not even be able to check what the lottery number is. One of the things that it can help you for is websites that are known, that have problems, that give you, that deliver spyware and will infect your computer. OpenDNS is one way, just one layer, to help protect you from those bad sites. And it will, I believe, reduce the spyware malware infections, but I will not make that claim that it is absolutely going to eliminate it. I just don't think it will, because the spyware writers and the websites, I think, react too quickly for even OpenDNS to be able to protect you. I think it's a necessary step, and it will reduce the amount, but it's not going to eliminate it. And that's why security has to be looked at in layers. We have the DNS layer that can protect us. We have anti-spyware and antivirus software on our systems that's protecting us at the system layer, system level. You have the outside perimeter, which is your firewall, and more sophisticated firewalls that do intrusion prevention, intrusion detection. If you're in a small company, I highly recommend that over a simple D-Link or Linksys router. You know, you may want to get into a Sonic Wall, where you purchase content filtering, intrusion prevention and detection. This is another layer where you can protect yourself. Then you have the router at the edge of your network that your ISP provides, and you have the security for that. All of these things together, I think, will greatly reduce the opportunities for spyware to come in and infect you. And it just depends on how many layers you want to build. And certainly building using OpenDNS is a good start. But what this shows you is that it depends on your ISP, whether you have Comcast or Verizon. Their DNSs are not identical. And you can have your DNS set for Verizon's and type something and go to the IP address and then type something with a different DNS number like Google and get routed to somewhere that's completely different. And it's because when was the initial change made? How often are they doing their updates? There's a lot of factors. So I definitely recommend the OpenDNS service that you should definitely use and recommend for friends, family, clients. It will help in reducing infections. And maybe if you want to take advantage of some basic content filtering, it will definitely help with that. You got to be careful. How often is OpenDNS being updated? Is it accurate enough for... I can't answer that. I know when I've used OpenDNS, I've never had problems. I've just never had any issues. But I'm always changing my DNS because I'm always tweaking and playing and testing something. I like to try different things. Comcast is horrendous sometimes. They change their DNS servers, and they change them too much. If you're in a server environment and you are setting up your DNS, which is Active Directory integrated, and it's on a domain controller server on a network, you want the forwarders set up to possibly OpenDNS, but not just OpenDNS. Put like a tertiary, a third DNS number, like level 3's 4.2.2.1 or Google's 8.8.8.8 or your ISP's. Interesting, Comcast just replaced a router for my client, and they said there's new IP addresses for their DNS. It was 75.75.75.75. Very easy to remember. And the second one is 75.75.76.76. They are changing everybody over to those two DNS numbers, and they're very easy to remember. I like that. So it is easy. And that's why when Google was able to obtain 8.8.8.8, that's awesome. What does this all lead to? If you can't get to a site, it may not be that the site's down. That's why I think there's a website. It's a site that you can go to, and you could put a URL in, and it will tell you whether that site's really up or not. We don't know if we go to a website, is it really down? So Patrick thought, listener, thought that, and thank you for sending me that voicemail, alerting me to that. And if you ever cannot get to content, or you see a problem with my show or the feed, sometimes that's the only way I can know that something's going on is if you let me know. The website is downforeveryoneorjustme.com. So downforeveryoneorjustme. And you type that all out, .com, and it will tell you whether the website's down. That great domain name. I like that. And I think it is nice addition to the topic here tonight. The bottom line is, if you see something's wrong, you know, definitely let me know. And this way, at least I'll check it out, and it may or may not be wrong. A couple things before we wrap up here tonight. One, I want to thank everybody for continuing to use my Amazon link. And even though I have a sponsor, please continue to use the Amazon link. That's so important, and I appreciate that. And please share that and spread that around. If you want a Mike Tech Show t-shirt or hat, I'm going to have links. The hats are very well made. They're very nice. You can see me. I'm wearing one on the Ustream broadcast. You can see it. They are right now $19.99 and $5 shipping and handling. If you can PayPal me and then with the name and address, $24.99, you'll have a hat. If you want a t-shirt, send me your size. And again, it's $15, $5 for shipping and handling. But if you're going to order both, it'll just be one time $5. Send me your size and you can PayPal me that amount and I will get them right out to you. I will have links to this. Hopefully built. I've been meaning to do this. So you can see there's a lot of things. I have to update the website with the new sponsor info, the survey, and the shirts. So I have a lot of work ahead of me this weekend, including some consulting work. With that, I do have some independent music that I want to play. And this is going way, way back. I think show number 2 or 3, I was testing my new mixer, and I think I played this. The song is called Please. The group, the Plutonics, give a listen, and then I'll be back to wrap up. Yeah. That is the Plutonics and the song Please. I will find their website and put the link in the show notes. I want to thank everybody for downloading and staying subscribed to the show. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much for all of your support. And I will talk to you same time, same channel next week. Bye-bye, everyone.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.